Chip Tam and football. That's what Pittsburgh does. What's up, everybody? Welcome back to another episode of the show. Brian Batko here from the Pittsburgh Post-Gazette with you as always on this podcast from the PG Podcast Network. But today, joined by my co-worker, colleague, Adam Bittner, because we're going to do a little bit of a free agent reset for the Steelers. Let's be honest, there's not much going on right now in the Steelers world. The free agents who are already in the fold have been signed, sealed, and delivered. Most of them became official on Monday, actually, with the Steelers announcing them. It's pre-draft visit season. Chris Carter, Ray Fittipaldo, and I, and Adam at times, will be going through a lot of that on the Monday, Wednesday, Friday shows, the mock draft tracker shows on Saturday. Make sure you're checking that out. So we're just going to kind of level up, take a step back, reset a little bit today. Is that right, Adam?
Yeah, we're going to get into the data. I wrote my PFF grades of the free agent and trade class so far. I mean, obviously, deals can still happen, but I think the bulk of the activity that we're going to see from the Steelers certainly on the high end has happened. So I kind of wanted to dig into the analytics a little bit and see how they, you know, whether they contradict the kind of conventional wisdom that surrounds this team. Or whether they reaffirm it. You know, that's why I love doing these PFF grades. People complain about PFF a lot, Brian, because it doesn't, you know, confirm their bias a lot of times. And they think for that reason that the PFF is, you know, garbage or it's the methodology is bad. I don't agree with Pro Football Focus all the time either, Brian. But I do like it as a means of like, let's talk about this. Let's dig into it. This is what the data says. This is what our eyes say. I think that's where a lot of great conversations can be had. So that's kind of why I wanted to delve into it during this relatively slow week here in Pittsburgh sports.
Yeah. So we'll add some context to that. And you're right, Adam. There probably will be some more deals, but not of the blockbuster variety, most likely. But just for reference, last year in April, the Steelers signed, I want to say, three additional players. But, you know, they were like Miles Boykin, Armon Watts, and Tanner Muse. So one of those guys didn't even end up making the final 53. So you might see some NFL caliber players still added between now and the draft. But yeah, for the most part, the heavy lifting has been done by Omar Khan and company. So we might as well circle back on some of those guys and, you know, add a little bit of, you know, insight or scratch some itches that we haven't yet with those. First of all, though, the show brought to you, as always, by Pella. No better place to get new windows and doors installed in your home than Pella, who can help you save on energy costs year-round. Schedule a free in-home consultation with your local Pella windows and doors to find the right product for your home and your budget. Give them a call at 866-593-1560 to discuss your project further. That's 866-593-1560 to get started planning on your new windows and doors installation with Pella Windows and Doors of Pittsburgh. All right, Adam, well, where do you want to start? You want to start with Russell Wilson? I mean, he's the first domino that fell in this free agency class, and all we're really getting out of him since his introductory presser on the South Side has been a lot of workout videos, a lot of pro Steelers propaganda, and, you know, people sort of popping up every now and again to give their thoughts, positive or negative, on the Russell Wilson signing. What sort of new light bulbs, if any, have gone off in your head about him?
Yeah, I got a lot of questions about him during Easter family, friends, activities. The Steelers are so much better at quarterback now. And I think the 26 touchdown passes is a stat that gets brought up all the time, and how much better that is than what the Steelers were getting from Kenny Pickett. Oh, he must be a big statistical upgrade. Digging into some of the other stats with PFF, I really don't know that that's the case. And that's not to say that Russell Wilson can't be a better fit here, can't play better than he did in Denver. But if you're using what he did in Denver last season as a baseline, very similar to Kenny Pickett in a lot of ways. His passing grade ranked 21st among quarterbacks with at least 200 attempts last season. Kenny Pickett was 23rd. I think there was only about 4 points of grade difference between them there. And the downfield, ineffectiveness downfield seemed to be the thing that stood out to me the most of why are they similar, these two guys, even though Russell Wilson seems to be, you know, making more plays with that higher touchdown total. The adjusted depth of target, which I've always, you know, it's not a be-all, end-all of how good a quarterback is throwing down the field, but it is a good indicator of how often are they looking downfield on average and how far downfield. And his was very similar to Kenny Pickett's. Again, it was 7.8 yards per attempt. Kenny Pickett's was just 7.5. Both of them were toward the bottom of the league. So a lot of similarities there between the two. One thing Kenny Pickett, I don't think, has gotten a ton of credit for here on the way out is that he only had 7 turnover worthy plays all of last season. Russell Wilson had 17. So not a whole lot of downfield explosiveness, and adding a level of risk with the turnovers. That's noteworthy, I think. Russell Wilson was probably a little bit better with big time throws, which PFF grades as the, you know, best plays thrown across football in a given week. They credit that as a big time throw. Russell Wilson had 27. Kenny Pickett only had 13. So in that respect, he was pretty, you know, made some solid throws, but it didn't result in a ton of downfield explosiveness again. So I think there might have to be a expectation adjustment, you know, statistically, if Russell Wilson is a similar player. Now, can Arthur Smith unlock things? Can he make him make that statistical profile look a little bit different? Absolutely. But, you know, I also look at the Steelers receivers as we sit here today. Other than George Pickens, is there anyone that you're looking at, you're saying, that's going to bump Russell Wilson's, you know, adjusted depth of target up substantially? And I don't see that. So not kind of trying to come down on Russell Wilson here, just pointing out that I don't know that all of the analytics kind of reinforce this narrative that's starting to form that he has been a significantly statistically better quarterback than Kenny Pickett.
Yeah, and I guess that's sort of the like reductive take on Arthur Smith, Russell Wilson marriage is going to be run the ball, run the ball, run the ball, bomb it deep. Maybe he can still do that with George Pickens running down one sideline and, you know, take your pick, Quez Watkins, Calvin Austin III, or rookie receiver X running down the other sideline. I mean, that's, that's part of why you're seeing some people believe in the Wilson experiment, and why you're also seeing respected minds, not just online trolls, saying they think Justin Fields is actually going to win this job before long here in Pittsburgh. And speaking of Fields, Adam, he's somebody else who, you know, we talk about these turnover worthy plays and that statistic from PFF. I mean, there's some subjectivity involved with that, but also, I mean, Justin Fields just a little bit more carefree with the ball, and you know, part of that's baked into somebody who's willing and able to run a lot is you're going to be in position to potentially put the ball on the ground, get it poked out, punched out from oncoming defenders. But I mean, that's been part of his story 3 years in with the Bears, and it is sort of, you know, difficult, I guess, to marry some of the advanced analytics and stats and the upside that portends with the win-loss record, which just is not very good for Fields. And what did you kind of dig into when it comes to his advanced statistical profile, if you're trying to find some of the good, some of the bad, or just make sense of all of it, his up and down time in Chicago?
Yeah, believe it or not, I'm not super concerned about the turnover-worthy plays. He actually had one less than Russell Wilson last year. He had 16. So, in that regard, there's not a whole lot of difference between them if you're using 2023 as your foundation, the quarterback he is now, not the quarterback he was as a rookie. For me, the thing with Fields is he does have what Russell Wilson didn't, which is his adjusted depth of target is 8.8 yards last season. That put him toward, I believe it was in the top 10 of quarterbacks league-wide. That's a very solid number. He is seeing downfield. The problem with him is the efficiency, right? He's not making the throws as consistently as you'd like him to. His adjusted completion percentage was 74.4. That ranks 22nd. And if just for background on that stat, that's factoring out drops. So if you throw a catchable ball, your receiver drops it. It counts as an incompletion in the normal statistics. But what PFF will do is say, we're going to credit you as a completion there as a truer indicator of your accuracy here. And so you don't get blamed for, you know, the drops your receivers are committing. But his big time throws, he only had 21. He ranked 18th among passers with 200 attempts. So those efficiency metrics could be a little bit better with him. And I think that's where the battle is going to be. If he makes any kind of a bid to challenge Russell Wilson, I think he's at this stage of his career better suited toward making plays downfield than Russell. But I think Russell's probably a little bit more consistent, and that's part of the veteran savvy, right? Brian is you know where the ball needs to go. And that's something that stood out to me in the Kenny Pickett era is Ben Roethlisberger, for all of his physical limitations in those final seasons, knew where the ball needed to go. was able to make quick decisions, was able to get it out fast. Maybe you'll have more of that with Russell Wilson. The question is, can Justin Fields get there to the point that he's a better package than Russell Wilson? I think over the, you know, the long run, he could be, he will be. It's a question of how soon does that happen in this Arthur Smith offense.
Yeah, and that's sort of why I've been a little bit skeptical or hesitant about the idea of this training camp competition between these two. Is they're both guys who can extend plays and scramble, and obviously Fields at this point in his career more of a threat to actually take off downfield with the ball in his hands, but you don't really get those opportunities often in the controlled setting of a Latrobe practice. Now, will you see it in preseason? Potentially, but how much do you risk playing a guy like Russell Wilson in exhibitions? How much are those guys going to sort of show off their true skill set in a game that doesn't matter? So, I mean, that's, you know, those are things that any coach has to manage. But, you know, that's why I think when you hear things like Russell Wilson is being in pole position, you know, that might be a little bit of an undersell for what he's actually going to be in terms of this competition going into next season. Flipping it over to the defensive side, Adam, maybe the most nebulous acquisition of the Steelers thus far this offseason is that of Dante Jackson, because I think, you know, we know that there were some issues behind the scenes with Deontay Johnson, but Mike Tomlin at the owners meeting said it was really a player for player swap between those two. Aside from the similarities in their names, I'm going to assume that the similarities in their metrics from last season are few and far between, because at least from the outside world, the people who watch football like a hawk, the you know, diehard media types out there, Deontay Johnson is somebody who's actually better than his statistical numbers indicate, and Dante Jackson, somebody who's, you know, maybe lost a step more than the production would tell you.
Yeah, I think nebulous is a great description there, Brian, because, you know, when I dug into the numbers, you and I on a lot of shows have talked about Joey Porter and how he's potentially going to be a number one shutdown corner in the National Football League. Guess who had the exact same PFF score on the total last season as Joey Porter Jr.? It was Dante Jackson. The exact number was 64.3. Now, how they got there was pretty different. Yeah. Joey Porter allowed 27 receptions on 57 targets. That's really impressive. That's more than half the time the guys he was covering, the guys the quarterbacks that target him did not make the play. And that's something you and I talk about a lot as great. I mean, that's what you want to see from a cornerback. Dante Jackson allowed 18 more catches. He allowed 155 more yards with the Panthers. Where I think Joey Porter is getting knocked in the analytics a lot is he allowed 15 yards per catch when he was targeted. So,
often guarding another team's best receiver, though, which right. I think is worth noting.
Right, right. I agree with you. I think that these PFF analytics definitely are underselling what Joey Porter brought to the Steelers defense. They say he's like the 101st best cornerback in the league. I don't agree with that at all. I guess I would more say that I think you and I kind of don't really look at Dante Jackson as maybe a serious player at cornerback. And I think he was a little bit, more consistent than maybe he's given credit for. And that's the takeaway I'm getting from the data is, was he as good as Joey Porter Jr. in your eyes' mind? I don't think so. But, he didn't allow as many big plays. And I think he could maybe fit in that number two cornerback role decently. With a guy like Joey Porter across the field from him and getting off that Panthers defense. So I'm going to be very curious to see, just because you're right. You have two guys that I think have very different levels of respect within the Steelers fan base, within the media, but they have the exact same score. Why is that? And how is that going to play out? I think that's going to be kind of a dark horse storyline for us to follow going into the season.
Yeah. I mean, I think part of it too is, you know, Joey Porter Jr. is a rookie. He's an ascending player. He was learning on the job for the most part, whereas somebody at Dante Jackson's age and experience level, you'd hope they'd be a little bit more settled in, and you know, you'd want to see them playing at a consistent level more so than you'd expect out of a 22-year-old who's never done it in the NFL. In layman's terms, one guy's on the way up, the other guy, you have to wonder, is he on the way down in the NFL at this point? But I just think over the years, we've seen, especially in recent years, Steelers cornerback usage, whether it's a young player or a vet, If you're a certain body type and skill level, you're going to have a chance to maybe play inside or maybe play outside, depending on how the personnel falls around you. Cam Sutton being a great example of that. You know, Patrick Peterson didn't end up doing much in the slot, but we know he had to rotate over to safety at various points. So I think depending on who they draft and depending on the health of somebody like Corey Trice Jr. and the development of somebody like Darius Rush, maybe Dante Jackson can kick into the slot, and you know, you'll figure out a way to get your best three corners out there 75% of the time. But
yeah, I think he can be a decent player. I think that's my takeaway is no, I don't think him and Joey Porter Jr. at the same level even now, you know, even given all the flaws that may have been in Joey Porter's game as a rookie. But does, you know, we're not talking about that. We're talking about, did you get something for Deontay Johnson? Maybe you didn't get commensurate value. You just wanted to get him out of here. But listen, I think he could be useful. And that's kind of my takeaway there.
Right. And I don't think that there's a huge drop. I think I wrote this in my mailbag a couple of weeks ago. Not a huge drop off, I don't think, from Patrick Peterson to Dante Jackson, if any. I mean, they showed you what they thought of Patrick Peterson's body of work in 2023 by parting ways with him and saving some money against the salary cap. We'll see if he finds his way back here at some point if the free agent market is cold. It was not cold for Patrick Queen at inside linebacker, got the biggest deal of any player at his position. Let's finish up, Adam, by talking about him and Deshaun Elliott, the two former Ravens, albeit Elliott had a couple stints with the Lions and the Dolphins in between. But I think these are two good additions. They feel like two Ravens-esque, infusions of toughness and talent to the middle of the defense. And I think they're going to allow the back end for the Steelers to play at a consistent level and maybe get the most out of guys like Minka Fitzpatrick and, you know, the D linemen in front of them. When we know that position is, you know, good on depth, but maybe lacking a little bit right now in terms of top end talent.
Yeah, I'll start with Elliott first because there's a little more to chew on with Patrick Queen. The blinking green light that you see in Elliott's profile is how good he was against the run. His grade was 83.5 in that category. That ranked ninth among safeties. And to me, it's not a question of, well, is Deshaun Elliott going to make you better against the run? It's what he gives the ability for Minka Fitzpatrick to do. And so many times we get on these podcasts, a lot of times I'll be talking with Paul Zeiss after a game on our live streams about how, man, Minka Fitzpatrick just didn't make any big plays today. He did not look like the guy we saw in 2019 when the Steelers acquired him. And that's often the answer is because he has to step up and run defense. That's not what he's best at. That doesn't, you know, make best use of his talents. And you see that reflected oftentimes in his PFF score is, whenever he has to play and step up more and make plays that the linebackers are not, his grade goes down. So I think Deshaun Elliott gives you the ability to put a competent safety on the field. He's not great. I mean, most of his other statistics are pretty mediocre, maybe even on the below average side, but he's a decent safety. But if he's on the field with Minka Fitzpatrick, what can Minka Fitzpatrick do? So that's something I'm going to be watching. And I think the way that the Steelers paired those guys could work really well if you're looking at the statistical profiles. And then getting into Patrick Queen, I was very interested to see what PFF had to say about that because something I've noticed in writing about PFF scores for several years now is that the grading system just is not good to middle linebackers.
A lot of position to play.
Right. And Robert Spillane, a guy who, you know, earned a level of acclaim this year with Oakland, or excuse me, the Las Vegas Raiders after leaving town, his PFF scores still aren't great. I think there was one guy who had a grade over 90, where I think there's like a gajillion pass rushers because they get the sacks, they get the big splashy plays. Their scores go very high. But when you're a middle linebacker and you have responsibilities in run defense, responsibilities in pass rushing on some plays, responsibilities in coverage on some plays, there's a lot more opportunity for those guys to do something that I guess PFF evaluators don't like. So Patrick Queen's score on its face is pretty ordinary. His season score was 73, but that's still ranked 26th in football. Some of the stats under the hood that really impressed me about him were he still ranks third among linebackers in total pressures with 27. I think only the Rams' Ernest Jones with 37 and Detroit's Alex Anzalone with 30 had more. And then Patrick Queen also had 52 stops for the Ravens last year. PFF defines those as plays that result in failures for the opposing offense. So if you, knock someone off a down and distance sequence, no gain type of situation, they give you credit for that. And that figure ranked really well in football too. I still have it written up here. That ranks 17th among linebackers. So he's an impactful player. He's making lots of plays all over the field. And to me, that matters more than the score itself, Brian, because I think the score itself is just naturally depressed by the position. So the fact that he makes plays to me is more interesting. And I think that's why the Steelers were very interested in him.
And there's obviously way more that goes into playing that position specifically. I mean, Mike Tomlin talks all the time about how that inside linebacker, whether he's wearing the green dot helmet or not, is such a hub of communication and getting guys lined up and doing all of those quarterback of the defense type things. And, it seems like they see a nice combination with Queen of he's been around, he's played four seasons at a high level, but he's also still a pretty young guy and physically should have his best football days in front of him. All right, Adam. Well, I think that pretty much covers all the big ones. Did you do any deep dives on Kyle Allen or Dean Lowry for the people, or do we feel like we'll let them sort themselves out and distinguish themselves come OTAs and training camp?
Yeah, not a ton of noteworthy stuff there. Things that are going to maybe reframe the dialogue. Quez Watkins signings like that. Didn't get too far into that, but
Cameron Johnston. Get your punter hang time and snap operation times.
Yeah, no, not a ton there. I mean, listen, it's going to be hard to make Steelers fans more angry than Presley Harvin did through a lot of last season. So it'll be interesting to see how those guys fit into the mix. I wish there was more sample size that we could kind of analyze things. But, you know, another thing I don't like to do either is overreact to small sample size. And in those guys' cases, that's what you'd be doing. So we'll just stick with those top five guys. And if anything more comes up, maybe we can do a second one of these.
Yeah, for sure. Well, either way, hopefully there's some more Steelers news to come this week. It seems like the pre-draft visits are going to pick back up now that everybody's back from the league meetings in Orlando. And, you know, I think they're only about a third of the way through their 30 allotted pre-draft visits. They don't necessarily have to use all 30, but they're going to want to keep pounding the pavement and doing their due diligence on guys that maybe they haven't seen as much on the pre-draft circuit, or they just really want to consider targeting them in the early rounds. So you turn over every stone. Thanks for hopping on, Adam. Appreciate it. Make sure to check out Adam's written report of all that we discussed Wednesday online, post-gazette.com. I'm Brian Batko. Thanks for checking us out here on the Chip Tam and Football Show. We'll be back with another episode of the North Shore Drive Wednesday and the Paul Zeiss Show Thursday, North Shore Drive again Friday, all the usual content that you've come to expect. Appreciate you following along all offseason. Talk to you next time.
Thank you for checking out this content from Post Gazette Sports. If you watch this video on YouTube, please like the video and subscribe to our channel. For all of the sports coverage the Post Gazette has to offer, visit post-gazette.com.